A Kiss at the Door by Elizabeth Spencer. When I was a child, I sat on a high stool and watched my cousin Felice cooking. She kneaded dough for rolls or rolled out biscuits on a slab of marble. The stool brought my head to about a level with her shoulder. She was a tiny woman, and when out on the street in her brown coat was as small as a thrush. Her intense, honest face was innocent of makeup. Did she have enemies? Did she have faults? Had she ever been in love? So far as I know, she was a friend to all and none. She was poor, as her father's firm had once lost money in a bad business deal. Though it was not his fault, so the family story went anyway, he undertook to pay off the great debts. When he died, worn out, Cousin Felice took up the struggle. She worked all her life, buying only such clothes as were necessary to look nice at work and at church. Wasn't this boring? It may have been. Her house stood on the corner of a distinguished street in the big town. My family used to leave me there when they came in from the country for shopping or doctors. I don't remember anything she ever said. I assumed that all nice cousins looked like her, and that she never had even once worn a stocking with a run in it, and that her purse and gloves, worn though they might be, were of genuine leather. I think of her now when baking bread, as I do once in a great while. What to knead it on? A marble slab would be ideal. As we never conversed much on days when I was left with her, and as I was just the same extremely aware of her in every finely trained detail, nothing about her was accidental or rebellious, it seemed that I was not so much there to visit as to take an imprint, something that my mother and aunts, with their prospering husbands and heads full of sale ads and ideas about redecorating and new clothes and parties, bent on having everybody back home one better, valued, but could not impart, for they had no necessity for staying spiritually still in one attitude. I was, of all children, easiest in the world to influence. If they had left me in a convent, I would have come out walking like a nun, trailing imaginary robes around my shoes for days on end. If by mistake a thief had been engaged to look after me, I would have longed to get into the 10-cent store back home in order to practice my shoplifting. As it was, I became not so much an imitator or disciple of Cousin Felice as some little cut-out figure placed in smaller outline within herself. I besought my mother for a small brown Morocco purse similar to hers and would comb my hair back in a manner much too old for me. Then I forgot. Cousin Felice went out of my head altogether once other and nearer stores and doctors were discovered by the acquisitive female world that my father and uncles slaved daily, all their lives, to supply. Why does she return now? Is it because of the bread? Placed in warm place, the bread rises, doubles in size. I have myself just about doubled, and Cousin Felice now exists, as regards myself, like a dim outline within me, for she herself would, if alive, come up no higher on me in my kitchen than I, sitting on a stool, once did in hers. And, as she is one with the invisible host of the dead, she must exist to me as a shadowy self within, in dim outline and motion with me, at such times as my memory evokes her. The surprise is, she isn't all that proud of being thought of. She won't stay. She leaves me almost as soon as she materializes. Who am I to have called her out? It is her disappearance which makes me ask this and other questions. Did she ever love me? Did she ever love anybody? Did any of us ever know? Did she even want me to be left there with her on Saturdays, her one free day? Wasn't she just putting up with it for the family's sake? Wasn't she, for that matter, putting up with all of life for the family's sake, for the sake principally of that one bad business deal her father had got mixed up in? Where on earth would she have been if he hadn't made that one mistake? It's what's kept her from being considered just another old maid, isn't it? Anyway, now she is impatient to be gone. I am not worth the trouble I am putting her to, even to remember her. She will tell me that, as easy as rolling out biscuits and cutting them out with a sharp thin cutter, none overlapping, each neatly defined, for the family will be in soon to eat supper. They have said they can't stay, but she will say it's already done, so laughing and bursting with southern compliments about any and everything, they will take off their hats and whisper behind her back that what they'd really like to take off are their shoes and their corsets. Over the food and the hot biscuits, they will say how wonderful she is. Later, she will stand at the door and say goodbye and come back when you can. Before I go, last one out, she will kneel down to kiss me on the cheek. It's all in order. That's what it is. It's why she hates to be bothered, to be called up to whatever strange city I happen to be in, because that's not where she's meant to be. There was a small, damp garden, what we called a backyard, back of a house, with a flagstone walk and an iron sundial in a circular flagstone area. She would let me go out there and sit on a stone bench. Once she came with me and sat by me, leaning forward, her hand heels pressed to the stone on either side, legs crossed, talking briskly about something. She had an eager voice and wore a gold watch loose on her wrist. Was there anything wrong about her? Nothing. Of course, she'd had a boyfriend, somebody she had talked to at parties in the big houses where friends of her family lived, and to which alone she was allowed to accept invitations, though if any from elsewhere were issued to her, we do not know from where and when. She was not shy with him, that lost face, that tall or slight form, dark or brown or blonde. She talked with an eager voice and wore white, or maybe blue taffeta or maroon velvet. In a simple way, a gold ornament on a chain hanging below the square-cut neck. Why didn't she marry him? Hadn't the shame, the shameful day and the ruined business and the house shuttered till late afternoon, and the family pew empty at church, and the friends wondering whether or not to call? What attitude to take? And the talks with this one and that one in the established community, and the haggard decision of honour, the mother sick in bed behind a screen. Had all that interposed to ruin her happiness, like a sort of last-minute rescue by the US cavalry or Sir Lancelot in reverse, leaving the father a Christ figure, ruined but exalted in her heart, before whom the young man, losing solidity, melted. Or had the simple drive in the first place never been strong enough? Would she ever have wanted to marry anybody? The truth is, there isn't any good way to know. You can eat the biscuits, and the biscuits are good. For the rest, if she knows, she won't tell you. But she does know something she doesn't have to mention, and that one thing is forever. It sustains her. She knew what burden she took on herself. Others knew it. They know it still. The burden became her identity. This is why she is restless with me and is leaving. She knows I am about to question her. The question, that's plain. To think it is to shout it. And she hears, was it worth it? She can't answer. She seems to be saying she never thought anybody would ask her that. She doesn't want to hear it. She is scared. Then, even at a distance, she rights herself, a diminished self, with terrible effort. She can and does ask me right back. What else could I do? I know what I would have done, and I boldly face her with it. I would have declared that the debt was no fault of mine. I would have let the guilt flee to haunt those tombs it belonged within the first place. I would have sold the old house for something fresh, practical, and pretty. What money I could make, I would have spent on life. Life. Life, the words die on my tongue. She is offering me supper. I am taking it. But she is angry now, really angry. There is red in her cheeks, which, though they still retain a fine, soft texture, burst in small red veins in a hot kitchen or under emotional stress into which I have now plunged her by suggesting that she chose the life she lived and might have chosen otherwise. There was no choice, is what she wants me to believe, what she herself has not ever had to tell herself. It was a belief so deep within her. Why bother her? Because I have to know one thing. Cousin Felice, were you human? I was, she is crying. I am. I felt hatred, new rebellion. I was afraid in dark old rooms, knew the dry ache of dying desire. But I came out and it was spring. Yonquils were blooming, the air was warm. And you? Her little hand is in mine, feet urgent beside me, voice eager, as I, monstrous, not deigning an answer, walk fast in a foreign city.